Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday morning. Happy St. Patrick's Day. It's March 17th. We've got 34 degrees and mostly cloudy skies here in Old Town Park City. Heber City is reporting 39 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you and all the listeners out there as we take a look at your forecast, starting off on a quiet and warm note out there overall, these temperatures. But watch out for some of those gusty winds, especially if you're going to be driving in those high-profile vehicles today. Make sure you have two hands on the steering wheel and just be aware that those wind gusts at times could get up to 40, maybe close to 50 miles per hour at times in some spots. It won't last all the time, but at brief times, we'll have those wind gusts that high. Now, as we go throughout the day, we'll start to see those clouds continuing to increase out there across the area. So we'll call it partly to mostly cloudy skies for us here as we get into the afternoon hours. Temperatures quite mild. Again, we get into the upper 40s and near 50 for Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid 50s for the Heber Valley with mostly cloudy skies expected across the area. As we go into tonight, we'll see those clouds really thickening up. And after, after about 6 o'clock or so, we'll start to see moisture moving in from the west and northwest. It may start off briefly as some rain showers, but will likely quickly switch over to the period of some heavy, wet snow across the region, both in Park City and in the Heber Valley. And that could start to pile up out there as we go throughout tonight into your Tuesday morning commute. So we do have a winter weather advisory that's in effect for both the Heber City and Park City area as we go throughout, 6 o'clock this evening, and that will last through 6 o'clock in the evening on your Tuesday. So we're looking at snow accumulations of around 4 to 8 inches for areas above 5,500 feet and about 2 to 5 inches for areas below 5,500 feet here. And again, this just basically means you're going to have to watch out for some winter driving conditions tonight, but especially the biggest impact being your Tuesday morning commute. Now, that snow will, of course, continue through at least Tuesday morning off and on. And so we'll have some tricky concerns for your Tuesday morning commute and maybe for the Tuesday afternoon and evening commute as well. Otherwise, temperatures will likely stay in the 20s for highs in Park City for your for Tuesday. So it's not going to be warming up very much. Highs barely above freezing in the Heber Valley into the low to mid 30s. And get ready for some frigid temperatures come Wednesday morning. We're talking about overnight lows down into the teens with highs in the mid 30s in Park City and highs in the low 40s for the Heber Valley. And along with that, we'll be seeing, again, a lot of sunshine returning back to the area. But we've got a couple of hit or miss storm systems that may briefly affect us as we get into your Thursday and then again on Saturday, bringing a chance of a few snow showers. But those systems don't look major at this time. But of course, all eyes will be on this evening after 6 o'clock through about 6 o'clock tomorrow evening, as we're going to be looking at off and on periods of snow. But tonight, there will likely be a period of heavy, wet snow, which will pile up again to several inches, especially above 5,500 feet.
Okay. Welcome to Sprinter.
Yes, I like that. It's back and forth.
Yep. Thank you. And on the phone with us with a look in the backcountry, we have Nikki from Utah Avalanche Center. Good morning, Nikki.
Good morning. So yesterday, there was a pretty widespread cycle of soft slabs of wind-drifted snow, primarily along ridge lines in those upper elevations. As well, a bunch of backcountry observers noted significant drifting. You could probably see that along the ridge lines from Park City as well. And obvious transport cracking, collapsing while traveling. And ski resorts also reported sensitive wind slabs. So the main issue today is going to be that wind-drifted snow. The winds picked up yesterday morning. They've stayed sustained today, and they're going to stay elevated through this evening with gusts up to 80 miles per hour. With that abundance of soft snow from the storm available for transport, these winds are going to rapidly continue to build both soft slabs and hard slabs. We expect to see that primarily at the upper elevations and leeward slopes, so north through east, but such high winds can drift almost any aspect and further down the slope than anticipated. As well, with the strong March sun today and prior to the cold front moving in, we could see some wet snow activity primarily on the south-facing aspects, at mid and lower elevations, and even some low elevation north-facing aspects. And then we're still talking about that persistent weak layer. The storm's been a good test for these weak layers. And while I wouldn't call them dormant yet, we are beginning to turn the corner, and we might eventually put those to bed. So today there's a considerable avalanche danger in the upper elevation terrain and mid-elevation terrain facing north through east, where the strong winds and soft snow have created dangerous avalanche conditions.
Okay, Nikki, thank you. Stay tuned. Coming up, unfortunately, a last-minute cancellation from State Representative Mike Kohler saying that he's got a terrible cold and basically lost his voice, so couldn't talk to us even if he wanted to. But we hope to reschedule him for later, later in the week or perhaps next week. But coming up, we will be checking in with Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher and Programs Director Heather Sims from the YSA, and Dana Jones, the director of the Stuyterville Basin Special Recreation District, will also be joining us. And just to note that Basin Recreation is a financial supporter of this radio station. A Best Western hotel will go up in Francis. That despite threats of legal action and a resident-led protest outside City Hall last Thursday night. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that city attorneys said denying the hotel would be unlawful.
Hotel! No hotel! No hotel!
Francis's council approved the Best Western 4-1 after 2 hours of public comment against it. The hotel will be constructed on the northwest corner of State Route 32 and Lambert Lane.
But I do want to thank y'all, and we really have a tough job tonight. So I don't want the city to get sued, and I think we're going to get sued one way or the other. So we just better pick who's going to sue us, you know, or whatever.
That's Councilmember Shauna Fryer. Residents did threaten legal action Thursday, and city attorney Jamie Blakesley implied the developer would win a lawsuit against the city if the council denied the hotel.
State law really is, it tilts the direction of private property rights in Utah over the right of the city to regulate. Conditional uses are a little bit unique. Sometimes when we hear conditional in normal language, we think, well, it's only allowed if we want it to be allowed. And then the assumption is, well, if we're loud enough that we don't want it, then the city council will have to say no, because democracy is, if more people want it or don't want it than want it, then they would have to disallow it. Unfortunately, state law is not written that way.
Besides technical lighting, setback, and other requirements, a conditional use permit only gives city officials the ability to require conditions to mitigate public concerns. As former Francis Mayor Byron Ames sees it, it's Utah's way of achieving a compromise. Francis has set 14 total conditions for Best Western builder Harwood Development, such as fencing to block headlights and trees to block noise. Council members said they couldn't mitigate the fact that almost no one in the room wanted the hotel. About 35 people showed up early Thursday afternoon to protest in the freezing snow. Crime has been a top concern among residents, who held up Do Not Disturb Francis signs as city officials and developer employees arrived for the meeting. Francis resident Amy Henderson says many of the neighbors came out after she and others distributed hotel-style Do Not Disturb door hangers.
We want to make sure that not only is crime, potential crime threats are avoided, we want to make sure that the obstruction of privacy is avoided.
Lindsay Hancock has been another vocal resident organizing against the Best Western and a second hotel proposal.
We can enforce our public elected officials to obey the codes and enforce the codes.
Residents argue city code says 24-hour businesses should be, quote, away from residences. City leaders met with the Utah Property Rights Ombudsman. The ombudsman issues legal opinions as a means of resolving land use disputes statewide, although the opinions aren't legally binding. According to Blakesley, the ombudsman thinks away from isn't enforceable because it's not objective. State law requires objective criteria to approve or deny permits, says Mayor Jeremy Foreman.
We've talked with not only our own city attorney, but several other attorneys who specialize in land use. And we've spoken with other land use experts, all of which agree, and among which there are no disagreements, that the state code trumps the city code in this circumstance.
Outside Francis City Hall, birthday balloons flew in the air, a 4 and a 5, signifying the 45-foot height maximum in Francis's city center zone that residents have been saying is too high. The Best Western will be less than 40 feet with 3 stories because it's not in the city center zone. A separate second hotel proposed in the city center down the street is seeking 45 feet. The city council shot down the second hotel developer's application for 4 stories. He'll have to settle for 3, a small win for residents who otherwise didn't get their way Thursday night. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Utah Department of Transportation has chosen how it will address Kimball Junction traffic after a years-long study. It's the least costly of all of the final options. UDOT had whittled down a field of more than 30 options to two final choices. On Friday, it announced that it's going with the less ambitious and less expensive of the two. It's called Alternative C. The final plan involves additional lanes, especially turn lanes around Kimball Junction, and more multi-use trails, including a second pedestrian tunnel under State Route 224. It's previously been estimated to cost $40 million. UDOT officials say they determined the final plan provides the greatest reduction in travel delay and the shortest I-80 off-ramp vehicle queue lengths. But it's unclear how the department determined those calculations or how much time it would save drivers when complete. UDOT previously considered sinking State Route 224 below Olympic Parkway and Ute Boulevard, removing all of the stoplights. That expanded the road's footprint, though, too much for state officials, and it was estimated to cost four times as much as the plan that UDOT has now chosen. After the underpass was ruled out, the other options beside widened roads and intersections was a new split diamond setup for the I-80 overpass, along with the road and pedestrian improvements. UDOT's announcement doesn't explain why that option fell short. State transportation officials began looking at overhauling Kimball Junction back in 2019. The transportation department's decision won't be final until after a public comment period. Residents can weigh in on the winning option in person April 8th at Ecker Hill Middle School and online April 10th. Written comments can be submitted until April 28th. Complete details are available on UDOT's website. You can find the link at kpcw.org. Summit County officials have been meeting with UDOT over the past year, closely watching its plans for Kimball Junction, in part because of Dakota Pacific Real Estate's contested development plans. In December, council members approved the developer's proposal to build residential and commercial buildings around Skullcandy headquarters. That agreement took 5 years, three state laws, and one lawsuit to negotiate, and the final version ties Dakota Pacific's construction scheduled to UDOT's traffic improvements. Since the council approved those plans, the company has been met with strong community opposition and a referendum effort to overturn its development agreement with Summit County. Traffic has been a top concern among residents opposed to the project. As they seek to put the agreement on November's ballot, Utah has passed a law to give Dakota Pacific development rights, and the company has filed to form a town on its 50 acres there at Kimball Junction. It's unclear if the new law or incorporation could untether the construction schedule from UDOT's roadwork. It's also unclear when or if Dakota Pacific will break ground and what that project looks like compared to what the county council approved back in December. Well, a bill awaiting Utah Governor Spencer Cox's signature would ban the display of pride flags on government property. KPCW's Christine Weller reports a local LGBTQ plus advocacy group is coordinating a counter effort.
House Bill 77 would bar all public schools and government buildings from flying any non-sanctioned flags. Sanctioned flags include officially licensed college flags, flags representing federally defined Indian tribes, and official Olympic and Paralympic flags. However, the bill would most notably ban pride flags. One exception would allow educators teaching an approved course on LGBTQ plus history to display a pride flag. If a government entity violates the law, it has up to 30 days to remove the flags. A continued violation of the law, however, could result in a fine of $500 per violation per day. Under HB 77's rules, the Summit Pride Foundation and Park City Municipal can't hold their annual pride flag-raising ceremony. The ceremony at Miners Hospital usually marks the first day of Pride Month each June. Summit Pride board member Virginia Solomon said people from all over the Wasatch Back attend the event.
It's really a bummer with the passage of HB 77 that the state is deciding that it wants to restrict the free speech of local communities to be able to kind of declare their own values, because that's really what this flag raising is, right? Park City values its LGBTQ plus community, and the flag raising shows it.
Summit Pride is now coordinating a Raise the Flag effort instead. The nonprofit will supply free pride flags to individuals and businesses to display throughout Pride Month instead of raising the flag.
We just want to show everyone that we might be missing from a couple of city and county flagpoles, but that the residences, the businesses in Park City and the Basin and larger Summit County, that they recognize that just because you don't fly the flag for a month from city or county flagpoles, that doesn't mean that the LGBTQ plus community isn't here and isn't valuable.
There are three size options community members can sign up for. Find a link to sign up for a flag on kpcw.org. The Park City Council also expressed its desire to find a way to continue showing its support for the LGBTQ plus community at its meeting Thursday. Council member Ed Parisian suggested changing the city's logo to include a rainbow.
They haven't banned rainbows. We all grew up rainbows. Hope, future, promise. I'm wondering if there's a way, I think I've seen this, but we can incorporate rainbows into our official city logo, our motto, so God forbid we don't break the law by putting a rainbow flag up.
Parisian said rainbows are a universal symbol of equality and inclusion. Other council members weren't sure about the idea. However, they expressed enthusiastic support in finding other ways to make LGBTQ plus parkites and visitors feel welcome. In a statement, spokesperson Clayton Scrivener said the city is still working to understand the parameters of HB 77, but remains committed to inclusivity. He said the city is dedicated to the safety, dignity, and rights of all of its residents. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Park City wants to build another pedestrian tunnel under Kearns Boulevard. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports it would connect the shops at the Snow Creek Plaza to the DoubleTree property.
The Park City Council signaled support Thursday for a long-contemplated pedestrian tunnel at the intersection of Kearns Boulevard and Snow Creek Drive. The project, expected to cost over $16 million, will require coordination with nearby property owners and the Utah Department of Transportation, which has jurisdiction over Kearns Boulevard, also known as State Route 248. Park City Mayor Nan Worrell said a tunnel would provide a safer alternative for pedestrians who sometimes jaywalk in the area.
You know, we've been studying this for a long time, and it's very dangerous there. There's a lot of people that kind of frog across the street.
In the short term, the council said it would like UDOT to install a high-intensity activated crosswalk, or HAWC, like the one on Park Avenue in front of Fresh Market. Park City engineer John Robertson said the HAWC can be optimized to time with nearby traffic lights.
You know, during peak times, we could see some greater backing up and congestion on 248, because every time the button's pushed, it stops all vehicle movements as pedestrians cross.
However, Park City Capital Projects manager Stephen Dennis said the tunnel project could compromise the short-term plan for the HAWC.
If we ink this deal with UDOT to bring the tunnel forward in a near term, I think it's unlikely that they're going to choose to advance the HAWC.
The tunnel will be contingent upon working with Singerman Real Estate, which owns the DoubleTree Hotel, also referred to as the Yarrow. The Park City Council delayed moving forward with the tunnel last year because of Singerman Real Estate's pending application to demolish the hotel and build a modern mixed-use development with condos, affordable housing, retail stores, and office space. Those developers have expressed a willingness to work with the city on the tunnel, but their proposal hit a snag last year when a majority of city planners didn't support height exceptions for the development. The DoubleTree Hotel redevelopment will now return to the Planning Commission March 26th. If the city doesn't advance the tunnel project, it could risk losing roughly $4 million in grant funding. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. To see the full list, you can go online to kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Studio now with an update from U Sports Alliance. I have Executive Director Emily Fisher along with Programs Director Heather Sims. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with a couple of stories from YSA graduates.
Yes, we've had some great success from our alumni. This winter, first off, Casey Dawson, he's a Get Out and Play alumni. He found speed skating through our after-school program and just fell in love with it. And he has had a great season. He also is a Stein Erickson Endowment Scholarship recipient. He, along with his teammates, won the team pursuit at Speed Skating World Championships over the weekend. These three have, his teammates and him, hold the world record in this event. And it's the first time they've won the world championships. So in the Beijing Games, they took bronze and they upgraded it this year to gold at the World Championships. So very exciting. And over the course of the World Cup season, Casey has also set the U.S. record in the 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters. And if you think about all the greats from the U.S. that have raced those distances, from Eric Heiden to Derek Parra, it's great to see him setting those U.S. records. And he finished 10th and 8th, respectively, at the World Championships. So if you want to be the next Casey Dawson, beginning next week, there is a 3-week get out and play, learn to speed skate session at the Park City Ice Arena. So the same spot that Casey got his start. You can find all that information at ysausa.org. And then Griffin Briley, who is a local Park City kid, went to Park City High School. He has received scholarship funding from the Stein Erickson Endowment. He did an incredible job at the Ski Mountaineering Junior World Championships. He won all of the individual races at the U20 age group, and then he was third in the mixed relay with his teammates. So just some really great results from some local athletes.
Yeah, so with this learn to speed skate, do you get the kids on the big skates, even though they've never done it before?
Yeah, they do, actually. They have some speed skates at the arena, but they also bring some up from the oval, and the kids get to try it with the actual long skates. And, you know, it's really fun. They make it really fun. They play lots of games, and just the kids just get used to it really quickly.
Okay. Let's see. Emily, it sounds like we've got the postseason scholarships still available.
Yeah, so these are the scholarships, again, through the Stein Erickson Endowment, and these are for athletes who train with one of our 7 Park City-based winter sport clubs. They are all need-based financial assistance, so to help pay for travel, training, and competitions. But the scholarships that are open right now are for athletes who qualified for a postseason competition, so whether that's U.S. Nationals, Regionals, Junior World, something that was not in their plan and they can't afford to attend those events, they can apply for a scholarship to attend those events. We have a couple of different periods for those because some of those events happen in February and some happen in April. So we try to have a couple of different application periods. But if you are part of one of the partner clubs, which is Figure Skating Club of Park City, Park City Ice Miners, Park City Ski and Snowboard, Park City Speed Skating Club, Wasatch Freestyle Foundation, Wasatch Luge Club, and UOP Bobsled and Skeleton, you can apply for those scholarships until March 31st. And so those help pay for those postseason competition. And again, all of that information is on our website, ysausa.org.
So what kind of information does the parent need to provide?
Because these are larger scholarships, the scholarships that we provide for after school programs, they really, you're just self-declaring, ticking a box. And then we provide a discount code or a different rate, because those are just smaller dollar amounts. For our postseason scholarships and for our Stein Erickson scholarships, those are much larger dollar amounts. So we do ask for financial information for anybody supporting the athlete. It's a bit of a longer scholarship application, but that's because the scholarship amounts are much higher.
And that's usually just because they're traveling further?
Yeah. I mean, some of these costs, when those athletes get to that elite level, just below the U.S. team, I mean, it's really a large amount of money that the families are investing. So, yes.
Yeah. About how much do you give out on these?
It really depends if the athlete is sort of just starting out or if they're just below that national team level. Scholarships, you know, range from probably $500 to $3,500, depending on their total cost and their financial need.
Okay, let's see. Heather, you tell us about this event that you hosted as part of the Power of Play series.
Yes, so we're now coming up to a year for our Power of Play, and we moderate a quarterly presentation on topics aimed to improve the youth sports experience on the Wasatch Back. So last Wednesday, we had Dr. Michael Larson, a performance psychology expert, Dr. Matt Seeley, a biomechanics professor focused on positive youth sports experiences, and Dr. Carrie Jaworski from Intermountain Park City Hospital, and they led a powerful discussion on athlete anxiety and sports performance. We had over 100 athletes, parents, and coaches in attendance. And athletes and parents learned techniques to manage pre-game nerves, overcome fear of failure, and address perfectionism in sports. Parents gained insights on how parents could encourage resilience in their athletes. We're currently looking at a new topic for the next quarter, but thankfully last Wednesday we had Intermountain support to our program, and it was really good. We had lots of interaction between the kids and the professors and doctors, and it was just a very good experience for everyone that was there.
Yeah, great turnout.
Yes.
What, like at the Blair Education Center?
Yes, yeah. It was at the Blair Education Center.
Okay, and then you post those on your website then?
Yes, it started off as a kind of a sharing information with coaches and venues and program managers on the Wasatch back. And so some will be for those that group of organizers on the Wasatch back. And then this one was our first one that was open to the public and for parents and kids, and so we'll try and do that again. We'll try and kind of manage our topics so that we can have those open to the public.
Okay, and then you've also got your spring series with the after school programs. Registration still ongoing?
Yeah, and so far this year we've had 2,385 students participate in our programs, with 22% of those on the free and reduced lunch program, and roughly half of our participants received scholarships or discounts. We're able to provide discounts or school programs to school employees, first responders, and siblings, thanks to our sponsorship from Kodiak. We have lots of opportunities still out there for the spring series. And we have speed skating, basketball, mountain biking, jazz and hip hop, woodwind, multi-sport. We have an art program that we're doing with the recycling center. And then we have an e-bike safety certificate, first aid, and lots more. And people can go to our website and check out ysausa.org. Our Get Out and Play is our 1st through 5th program, and our Activate is our 6th through 12th.
Okay, so like mountain biking, that's another month or so off.
I know, yeah, I know people aren't thinking about it, but believe it or not, we've actually sold quite a few registrations, people wanting to get their kids ready for the summer. I gotta admit, I'm ready to get on my bike.
Okay, anything else, ladies?
No, just always a shout out to all of our venue partners, all of our sponsors, all of our donors. We can't do this alone. We have seen a lot of growth, and with that comes a lot of additional support. And we're just very thankful and grateful to the community for continuing to help us provide opportunities for all the kids in our community, regardless of their financial background, race, ability. And it's just something that we are very proud of and thankful for.
Okay. Emily Fisher, Heather Sims, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, Hideout owns about 10 acres adjacent to Jordanelle State Park. Town leaders say the land is ripe for mixed-use development. And as KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports, they're now considering how to fund that development.
And Hideout surveyed its residents about what kind of development they'd like to see on the Ross Creek land. They overwhelmingly asked for no more residential or hotel development. Instead, locals requested mixed-use or recreational areas, like a grocery or general store, restaurants, outdoor gathering spaces, or trails. Town leaders say they're still working on plans for the land while they consider funding mechanisms to make the future development happen. At the Hideout Town Council meeting Thursday, council members heard from Kyle Fielding, an attorney who specializes in land use and tax increment funding. Fielding said Hideout could use a community reinvestment agency, or CRA, to finance the Ross Creek development. That's the same financing plan Heber City is using for its downtown revitalization project. As Fielding explained, a CRA sets aside certain tax dollars for new development. It does so by determining a tax increment with partnering government entities.
It has no taxing authority, so the only way it gets funding is by agreement with other taxing entities, including the city, county, school districts, special service districts, anyone that levies a tax on property within a project area.
Everyone who opts into the plan would make an agreement for how much tax revenue would be dedicated to the CRA and for how long. Fielding says the timeline is typically around 15 years, although it can vary. Governments don't lend the CRA money from their existing tax base, only a share of the tax revenue from new development or higher property values. Fielding says that means the financing plan has no risk.
If there's no growth, then nothing happens. No one's paying anything. It's just if there's growth and if there's an increase in tax revenue, then there's some money available.
Hideout Mayor Phil Rubin asked why entities would agree to forego some of their tax revenue for a CRA.
What's the value for them? We know what the value is for the community, but I don't know what the value is necessarily for those that are passing up their tax increment for some period of time.
Fielding said CRAs typically argue that without incentivizing development, those same taxing entities might not see increased tax revenue so quickly or at all. He said it's most important to get local school districts buy-in since their share of property taxes is highest. But it can be a tough sell if a CRA's goal is residential development, since the district would delay seeing higher tax revenue, but also take on the higher cost of more students. The Wasatch County School District declined to participate in Heber's CRA. The Hideout Town Council didn't make any decisions Thursday about whether to form a CRA. First, council members say they're trying to cement plans for the Ross Creek land and find a development partner. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Utah public labor unions have officially launched a referendum campaign to repeal a law prohibiting them from collective bargaining. KPCW's Christine Weller has more on that.
A coalition of public labor unions called Protect Utah Workers started gathering signatures Saturday in an effort to overturn a state ban on collective bargaining, a process where an employer and a union negotiate wages, benefits, and other aspects of worker compensation. Under the law, new labor organization employees will also be excluded from participating in Utah retirement systems, which provides retirement and insurance benefits to public employees. Utah Education Association president and former Park City School District teacher Renee Pinkney said educators, law enforcement, electricians, bus drivers, and more are part of the coalition.
This referendum is about restoring fairness, dignity, and the ability for workers to have a say in their wages, working conditions, and futures.
However, HB 267 sponsor Representative Jordan Tusher said the law is an effort to guard public resources from subsidizing union activities. Thousands attended 8 launch events Saturday in northern Utah, the Salt Lake Valley, Utah County, and southern Utah to sign the referendum. More than 1,500 volunteers signed up to help with the signature gathering effort. The coalition now has 30 days to collect at least 141,000 valid signatures to qualify a citizen-led referendum for the 2026 ballot. That's almost 5,000 signatures a day that must be collected in person. Pinkney previously told KPCW the coalition plans to gather 200,000 signatures as a buffer.
While this coalition is strong, this fight is ultimately about the individuals and families who make up our communities. The people who drive our kids to school, who ensure public safety, who test our water, and who work every day to keep our state running.
At a kickoff event in Murray, public workers shared how unions have helped and supported them. Josh Dietz, a lab technician in the infectious disease wing of Utah Public Health Laboratory, said to an emotional crowd that unions helped him and his wife afford fertility treatments.
I would not have my family without the protections that unions provide. I would not have the stability and strength that I have in my life. Working in the infectious disease lab, it is nothing but the unexpected. Nothing but the unexpected. But I take great pride in helping keep Utah safe.
Ben Jordan, a lab chemist and a member of the local American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union, said the union helped him secure a stable job in 2012 after he was laid off in 2009 and owed more on his house than it was worth. Jordan said through the union job, he's been able to become more experienced in his field, pay for costly medical expenses, and put aside money for retirement.
Before this union job, I was on the edge of losing it all. For anyone who thinks public employees are just getting fat off taxpayer dollars, I think you're confusing us with certain legislators.
But not all Utahns are in favor of unions. The Salt Lake Tribune reports Utah's chapter of Americans for Prosperity praised the legislator for its, quote, courageous action to make sure public funds do not go toward causes that aren't in their best interests. One provision of the bill, for example, prohibits unions from using public facilities, like a school building, to hold meetings, which some argue subsidizes union activities. HB 267 goes into effect July 1st. However, if the signature threshold is met, the law will be put on hold until voters determine its fate at the ballot box in 2026. A full list of Protect Utah Workers Coalition members can be found at kpcw.org. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from Basin Recreation, I have District Director Dana Jones. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you. You too. So it sounds like our trail reports are coming to an end this week. How do things look out there?
You know, we have been scraping by with some trails at Ecker and Upper 5K, but we've pretty much lost everything else as far as winter trails go. So a lot of the paved stuff that we've been grooming, we're going to be plowing. It's just with this, you know, snow and then warm and then snow and then warm. But we did groom Ecker and the Upper 5K yesterday. So.
Yeah, and then we had heard, yeah, they're not going to touch it just because it's too warm. How much snow? Do you have any idea on some of those paved trails?
Oh, not much.
Not much.
In fact, most of them have melted out. And on the positive note, all of our turf fields have pretty much melted out also. So if you go by those fields, you'll see people out playing on them.
Okay, which is a place to be on the paved trails and the turf, or stay off of the single track for now?
Stay off the mud. And it's, you know, it's kind of people don't think about the impact they have on those muddy trails. And it's not just bikes on the muddy trails. It's walkers, it's runners, it's all users can mess up those trails when they're muddy. So no matter what kind of recreation you do, just please stay off those wet and muddy trails.
Okay. I believe you already have done, opened up registration for your summer camp.
Actually, not yet. That actually happens on April 9th at 6 a.m. sharp. Now, we do have over 120 options for summer activities for your kids. If you're talking about all the swim programs and the camps, and so if you want to start planning and put your calendars together, they are all posted now, but you can reserve them starting on April 9th at 6 a.m. But we wanted to get those options out to the public so you can start putting together your calendars and be ready to go for April 9th.
Okay, so what, it's just kind of like first come, first serve, huh?
It is. And, you know, some of them fill up very quickly. Others, you know, will take kids as long as people want to go. And don't forget out there, for those of you that are interested, we do have scholarships, and they will pay up to 70% of the camp tuition. So if you are looking to go to camp and just not sure if you can do that, make sure you look into our scholarship program.
Okay. Pretty easy, though? Or do you, I mean,
oh, very
people
easy.
Need financial documents or something?
Basically, if you qualify for the school lunch program, then you qualify for our scholarships. But all the information is on our websites. Our brand new website that's great and easy to use, I'm being told all that information is on there, including the scholarship application.
All right. Sounds like we got a new trail that's going to go in this year.
You know, this is something I'm super excited about. This has actually been in the works for about 15 years. So this has to do with High Ute. So for those of you who have been around a while, you know, about 15 years ago, Utah Open Lands and Basin Recreation with bonds purchased a kind of a right of first refusal to purchase that property and also a conservation easement. Well, a couple of the trails were built at that time, the Millennium Trail and things like that, but we have been waiting for the ability to build the connector trail, which will allow people to start from Ecker and go up and meet Mid-Mountain. And it's going to go through High Ute. So we're super excited about that. We actually, and if Utah Open Lands were in lockstep and partnership with them, because they have also been granted, they were donated the front parcel of the High Ute property. So the front 344 acres, including the High Ute barn, is now part of Utah Open Lands, and they own that, and they're going to be doing some great restoration work on that barn. And with the potential to be able to use it for conservation education and environmental education, have school groups come in there. And so that, along with the trail that we're going to be building, people have been wanting this trail for a long time. We did put out the RFP, or the request for proposals. That went out Friday. So if there's any trail builders out there that are interested in that, make sure to go to our website, because we are going to be selecting a contractor to be building that trail, and we are crossing our fingers and hopeful that that trail will be built by the end of the season this year.
All right, so where is that going to connect? You say from the Ecker Trails, and where is it going to connect with Mid Mountain?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's up, it'll go up through just a small portion of Pine Brook Trails also. So it'll go up through Pine Brook and it'll connect up in there. I couldn't tell you exactly where, but it will connect to Mid Mountain up in that area.
Okay, so kind of that hunter, what we call that kind of that hunter's trail?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you, for people that are just interested in that, if you go to our website and look for the RFP, there are maps that show the actual trail alignment in the RFP, so you can see where the trail is going to go. It's going to be just an incredibly beautiful trail up through Hiyu. It will be a multiple-use trail, so it will be bikes and hikers are going to all be able to use it, but it will be something that I believe the public has really been waiting for.
All right, and you say 15 years in the works. What took so long?
You know, there was a lot in the agreement, the original agreement, and it had to do with the owner of the property and being able to where that property was going to go, if the county was going to actually purchase it, if it was going to stay in the ownership. There was a lot of things that kind of precipitated that, but it was just one of those things that takes a long time.
Okay. Any news on amenities there at the Silver Creek property?
You know, there's a couple of issues that we're having with the development agreement and things like that. So we're actually actively exploring some other potential locations for an aquatic facility / fitness facility. There are a couple of things that we're looking at that might come to fruition and might be actually a better location for that facility. We are still looking at, in the future, possibly putting some fields and, you know, other kind of outdoor amenities at Silver Creek, but not sure whether the facility is actually going to be going on that property or not.
Okay, so when do we hear about possibly a new location?
Well, we've got a couple different things in the works, and so I am hopeful that by mid to the end of this year, we'll have a little bit better idea on that. But Basin does own several other pieces of property, and we are, and the county owns several pieces of property, so there are other options for potentially being able to put something there.
Okay, and I mean, what happened with the development agreement? Because, I mean, this was like 100 acres, I thought, that was purchased from the developer.
So, interestingly enough, there's that 100 acres, a portion of it was, I believe, donated from the developer. And that is the portion that is under the development agreement. And the development agreement is fairly specific about what can go there, and a building wasn't in that agreement. So that we would have to get the development agreement amended. But the other part, there's another portion of that property that actually was purchased by Basin Recreation. It's known as the Fireman's Fund property. That's the piece of property we were looking at putting a building, fitness facility, aquatic center on. If the public remembers, we had talked about that maybe a year ago. There are some issues with that having to do with height and having to do with traffic and the ingress and egress into that area, cars being able to get in and out. So there was some concern as to, is that really the best location? And County Council has said, and you know, the Planning Commission has said, do you have a better place for this? Is there a better location where, you know, the traffic's not so much of an issue and the height isn't so much of an issue? So we are looking at all the different options right now.
Okay. Let's see, some upcoming events. Looks like you've got the Run Amok Cleanup. I think you do this twice a year?
Yes, we do. And actually, Run Amok is closed for a month, I believe, later in the summer. And we do a number of cleanups during that closure. But we do have the spring cleanup coming on April 18th. So it's all the information's on our website. We are really expanding our volunteer program with Basin. So we are really looking for the public to come out and help us, not only for events like the Run Amok event, but like our egg scramble, our Easter egg scramble that's going to be on April 19th, and our color run that's happening this summer. All those events that we do, we want to get the public involved as volunteers as well as participants. The other thing that we're doing this year that we're really excited about is some of those events, you know, the Basin-sponsored events, so things like the Egg Scramble, the Color Run, we are going to be making those events free to the public. So we really want to invite our local families to come on out for these things. We don't want people to feel like they have to sign up in advance and they have to pay for something. Because if you have a big family, that can, you know, those kind of things can add up. We want to make them really big community events, and we want to get the community out celebrating together. So we're doing that this year. But also, we'll be looking for volunteers to help, because we anticipate a lot more people, hopefully, are going to be attending those.
Okay, yeah, there's no way the staff can handle that.
No, and we do a kind of an all-hands-on-deck for staff, so you'll be, you know, at those events, if you come, you'll see everybody from our trails crew to our parks crew to our admin staff are all out helping with those events.
Okay, it looks like you have a number of jobs posted for hiring. Are these just seasonal positions?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are for our summer positions. We actually ramp up quite a bit during the summer, as you can imagine, with 120 offerings of programs. So we have currently about 48 full-time staff that work for Basin year-round. But during the summer, we'll hire up to 200 part-time staff. So we'll have up to 250 staff on payroll during the summertime. It drops down to maybe 150-ish on the quieter times of the year. But even the quieter times of the year are not so quiet anymore.
Yeah. Lifeguards, that used to be an issue. Are you doing okay with the hiring of those?
We are. We have a new aquatics coordinator that's kind of running our pool, Leon. He's doing a great job. He's recruiting some great lifeguards and swim instructors. And in fact, if you look on the website at the jobs that are posted, lifeguard is not one of them for once.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to add?
Happy to be here, happy to be doing these great updates. And if anyone has any questions, if you can't find it on our website, give us a call.
Okay. Danny Jones is the Executive Director of Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District. Well, Utah State Liquor Agency wants to put another store in Park City at Quinn's Junction. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that local officials aren't quite sold on the location.
The Department of Alcoholic Beverage Services tells Summit County officials it plans to build a new retail liquor store on State Route 248 just east of U.S. Highway 40. It would be on Utah Department of Transportation land across Old Highway 40 from where Maverick will build a new gas station and convenience store. Summit County and Park City Council members went over the proposed liquor store at a joint meeting Friday because UDOT's land crosses the city-county line. Summit County Community Development Director Peter Barnes says that could make distributing sales taxes complicated, and he's concerned that DABS's designs don't meet city or county code. But they don't need to. UDOT's land isn't zoned, and state law doesn't give local officials a say in liquor store construction. Here's Barnes.
I think we all recognize it's a congested traffic problem. I'm not sure if putting a destination liquor store in that particular location is a good idea, but that's not for me to say.
If Barnes was in charge, he says he'd put the liquor store in Silver Summit or Silver Creek, both with pending mixed-use development applications. Park City Council member Ryan Dickey says the city has discussed Park City liquor sales with DABS in the past.
I think Snow Creek is the top volume store, or was in the past, and they just have trouble with inventory in that store. So I think it's going to pull traffic in and out of Park City and from the surrounding area to this location. That could be a tough break.
The intersection of Old 40 and 248 is changing quickly. Old Highway 40 moved a few hundred feet east last summer, and it may soon see a stoplight. The Snyderville Basin Planning Commission greenlit a Maverick in October across the street from the liquor store site. The company said it would install a light there to help mitigate traffic. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.